afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, today is May 10th. It is Mother's Day all day. So, happy Mother's Day to all the moms. We know that's a job. It's a job, and for all the people that are, I've had people say I'm just a mom. It's like, oh, well, yeah, that's a whole job all by itself. So, Bill, got anything to add?
Being a mom is a job all by itself.
Oh, man. You're fired.
Okay.
Bill's fired. So we've got Mike Ariza on with us today because we are updating. Let's see. This would be part 8, I think. Now that seems not enough parts, but it's 8 or 9. I'll have to double check. Of our gas situation, the California gas situation, that does affect everyone else. Why? Why does it affect everyone else, Bill?
Because they might want to come to California and buy gas.
National security. Come on.
Oh, yeah, national security. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Today is Stump Bill Day. It's no longer Mother's Day. Today is Ask Bill Questions He's Not Ready For. Ah, poor Bill. Wife is horrible. I feel sorry for him being married to whoever that is. Yeah. She must be a monster. Oh, man. So there is a 2-page paper on here, California Gasoline Supply Outlook, a Disaster in the Making, written on April 15th, 2026 by Professor Michael Michet, that we have interviewed bunches of times. And also James Rector, who is a professor at Berkeley. So these guys put together a 2-page overview, and we thought it would be worth highlighting and also doing a little more focus on the refinery, just refinery stuff. We always do a lot of facts and figures and math and all that stuff, but I don't think people really understand how tricky it will be if we do lose our refineries. Meanwhile, we have Tom Steyer running for governor in California, who's running around telling everyone he beat big oil and, you know, punished them or whatever the heck he was doing. And so obviously.
Yeah, that's working out. That's working out well.
Obviously he's part of the problem.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that. So Mike is maybe in there, maybe not in there. Yeah. Hey, there you are. So, you're a U.S. Navy veteran. Thanks for that, Mike.
And thank you.
You were at the Chevron oil refinery as an operator, Exxon Valero in Benicia as a senior refinery technician, Flying J, and now you're at Chico State making the campus run, like all of it.
That's what they tell me.
That's the rumor.
That's the rumor.
So I thought I would let you give a little bit more of your bio as we go through this, just because I know we're going to talk about refinery. I didn't know if you wanted to start with the paper or that, or how you wanted to kind of go about this today.
I'm not really sure. I think you just kind of brought up Professor Michet and Rector's paper they published on the 15th. Basically, as you know, we've been kind of working together, me and Professor Michet and Assemblyman Ellis, for, 10 months now. And we saw this coming. We published our initial 10-page brief about military force readiness back in October. That was the 21st, asking for the Defense Production Act to be invoked under the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution based on what the three of us saw with our... You know, between the three of us, we have, as professor said, we have about 120 years of experience between the three of us. And the professor is like the research guy. Stan, as you heard last week, is definitely the scientist. And then I'm the practitioner. I literally flew the plane. The disaster, the looming disaster potential we saw coming, caused us to write that brief on October 21st that was published in Washington, D.C. Strangely enough, as I've been researching Andy Waltz, the CEO of Chevron, about a month and a half before then, was talking about how the refineries have been treated, how the oil corporations have been treated by the state. And back on September 5th, he actually said, I think that we are already at that crisis mode. So he was seen with the shutdown, the conversion of the two refineries to diesel, renewable diesel, and then the pending shutdowns of Wilmington and Valero. He saw, you know, he saw the disaster coming. So he was making these quotes. September, October, we published our brief. October, I think it was 17th, Wilmington shut down. Right around the same time, Valero and Benicia canceled their contracts, their oil contracts, crude oil contracts. At that point, we kind of figured that Valero was going to start reducing its rates because it was going to run, it wanted to run off all the intermediate tanks because unlike a normal turnaround maintenance period that a refinery goes through, they were going for a permanent shutdown, which means they have to get all their tanks emptied, everything, you know, cleaned up so they can basically leave everything in a mothball state. So they started reducing rates. One evidence of that was we were seeing imports of jet fuel from South Korea. They started going up. And when Valero reduces its crude oil rates, its jet fuel production proportionally drops off. Also, based on that, we kind of figured that they were going to shut down around January, though they were announcing April, but that they would actually pull crude oil out of the refinery on January, and that's what they did. So, you know, we had that spot on, and then prices started going up when Valero went down long before, well, let's see, January 31st. February 28th, the Iranian war started. So, it, you know, up where we live, Reading and Chico, gasoline prices are already up about 80 cents a gallon. They started climbing about a week after Valero pulled the plug. Of course, the media keeps reporting they're going down in April. You know, it's fine, but they actually went down January 31st. And then this letter, I was giving the professor a call, this two-page document, but I was curious because I know that you know, we heard in the town hall that South Korea stopped shipping his jet fuel. In the town hall, he got a text from somebody.
Yeah, and that was, what was
April 2nd.
Yeah, okay.
So you go April 2nd, and I was calling him because I knew that they had stopped, all the Asian refineries had stopped sending us gasoline, jet, and diesel, China, India, South Korea, and Singapore. So I was kind of say, Professor, you know, I was going to call him again. You guys had a chance to look at the numbers, and at the same time, he sent that document to me when I was trying to call him. So that right now, that document to me is a template. We're kind of on page, we're on paragraph 4, going past paragraph 5. If we want to, let's see, I can pull that up. Let's see. So I'm on our website here. Let's see. So if you go to paragraph 4 for folks that are listening, he says, okay, the full effect is yet to come. Okay, alarmingly, dramatic reductions in gasoline and crude imports have yet to hit California's physical supply. Now, keep in mind, folks, that this letter was dated April 15th. We're now well into May. He says, California depends heavily on the CARB-compliant gasoline from refineries in Asia, which provide nearly all of California gasoline imports, which is actually 40% of the overall gasoline supply for the state. These Asian refiners, notably, he notes in here, India and South Korea, but there's also Singapore. China doesn't supply us with gasoline. I don't think it is diesel, but they shut those off. But he notes that they curtailed their exports around March 15th. But the corresponding decline in the arrivals to California has only just begun due to the shipping times, 25 to 45 days coming across the ocean. So over the next 1 or 2 weeks, our gasoline imports are expected to drop off sharply, and that's what's going on now. That's why now they're starting, the media is finally starting, oh, we got 4, maybe 6 weeks of gasoline supply left. You know, they're starting to report these things finally. He says gasoline imports are expected to drop off sharply, which reflects cargoes that were never loaded or diverted. And this will mark the point at which the import shock becomes fully visible in terminal supply, and ultimately it's going to hit us at the gas pump, not just in our prices, but in, as you go in farther in his document, he's talking about shortages, which is spot on. That is going to happen. Very, very likely now that's going to happen. Same thing with crude oil. We're the only state in the country that imports any amount of crude oil from the Middle East. It's instead of producing our own, we've all, me and you and Stan, we've all discussed this many times, of how much, you know, we had the fifth largest reserves in the country, and we used to produce our own, then we had the refineries, which would refine our own products. So now, not only, if you take a look, it's interesting, if you look at this marine traffic.com, it shows all the different ships all over the world. You can look at the Pacific right now, and there's nothing coming our way, which is not good.
Yeah, that's actually good. Super not good.
Yeah.
So with nothing, do we think all of it has docked or no?
I looked at it. There are a couple ships still docked, one or two ships hanging out. I didn't see maybe one or two ships down in L.A. They list them as chemical oils or oil products tankers. Almost every ship that's in the Bay Area or down in L.A. Long Beach is a crude oil tanker. So there's very few ships now. They've probably been offloaded or nearly offloaded. And what he's talking about is there's nothing coming behind them, because when the and this is a vulnerability, Aaron. Bill, this is a vulnerability. All of us have talked about, the five of us, where we talked about, if you have a problem at the Port of Los Angeles, or you have right now, God forbid, we have another refinery go down, unscheduled downtime right now. Even storms at sea, holding ships up. Well, another thing the professor mentioned was some type of global conflict. Well, we have it now. We have that global conflict. And all of those refineries in Asia, they supply us with gasoline, jet, and diesel. Because they get all their crude oil through the Strait of Hormuz, they had to cut their rates back. And it gets down to something really simple on logistics. It's like Andy Waltz is saying, if you have a Chevron refinery in South Korea, and you have to cut way back, you can't run South Korea dry. The home nation that you're in, you got to cut off whatever you're exporting, you got to cut off. And that's basically what they had to do, because they are running out of crude oil. So we left ourselves totally vulnerable. We went from totally energy dominant, which California used to be, to energy dependent. And we saw this as a strong possibility of what was to come. Again, when Valero went down, we already started to see the prices go up because we couldn't offload enough fuel. Now, the situation we're in with that, and then with some of our crude oil being cut, because we have been importing crude oil from the Middle East ourselves, just in this state, we're in trouble. And his document just kind of, that document just kind of lays it out. So, I saw prices increase in Chico and Hamilton City about like a week and a half ago. I was going out to the farm and coming back. I suddenly saw the prices jumping again. So that told me that we've hit that critical point now where the ships are not coming anymore, and we're starting to feel that supply shock. So basically 40% of our fuel that was coming in is not coming in anymore.
So probably the first places that are going to get hit with shortages are the rural areas, because they're not going to want the big cities to run out of gas. So the rural communities will be the ones that are probably going to be the first to be affected. Would you agree with that?
Maybe. They have their contracts, Bill. I'm not. It's more of the downstream. I think you get into rationing, even back in the 70s, it didn't matter where you are. It was rationing, odd, even all that stuff.
Right.
And the thing is, now we can't pull ourselves out of it. We don't have, back in the, we talked about this before too, back in the 70s, we had the ability to refine the crude oil. It was a crude oil shortage, not a product shortage.
Right now, it's true.
A product shortage. So we don't have the refineries. The refineries aren't there. That's the problem. They don't, like news media and different people that know, they don't really think about, that I hear, they don't think about the fact that Rodeo and Marathon and Martinez went on renewable diesel. That basically took 350,000 barrels a day of crude oil refining capability, took it offline. So that means the gasoline they were making, the jet fuel they were making, and that's why I say 40% imported, because you took around 18 to 20% of the gasoline run offline in 2023 when those refineries converted to renewable diesel. They were effectively no longer crude oil refineries. Then Wilmington went down. That was another 8 to 9%. And then Valero, which nobody realizes, Valero is a big gasoline producer percentage-wise of crude. If you look at the percentage of crude oil converted to gasoline in your typical refinery, You can look it up. It'll be like 50-55%, you know, on the high end. Well, Valero, it's like 70%. So the crude oil that they actually convert to gasoline. They don't make extra jet fuel and extra diesel. They make extra gasoline. So the gasoline hit, that's why I say, you know, Valero's like 12%. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, 2-3%, whatever, bottom line is we're importing about 40% of our fuel, and now that's gone. That's why the professor put that document, a crisis in the making. I mean, that title is very appropriate. It is literally a crisis.
Mic drop.
have we increased oil production since all this started?
Okay, boys, hold on. We have to take a really quick break. Then when we come back, we'll talk about that. So you're listening to We the People. It's May the 10th. This is the ninth different program of the programs we've done on the oil and gas issue. And the paper that we keep referencing, California Gasoline Supply Outlook, that is on the page for today on May the 10th. You can print it off yourself or just read it online. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
Doing bad things to you. The official theme song of the California State Legislature.
No doubt. Sometimes I feel so sorry for Sam.
At least the supermajority. The rest of the people are just trapped and along for the ride. And for all those of you that are thinking that you might not vote here on June 2nd in the state of California, I hope someone slaps you right now. Just a big slap coming from us. Yes, it makes a huge difference. And the only reason, you know, funny, people complain about the people in office, but hard reality, they're not electing each other and they don't elect themselves. So who really is to blame? So anyway, so Mike, Bill, you had a question on the way out.
Yeah.
On the way, cut you off at the pass.
Have we increased oil production since this has been brought to light?
Yeah, you know, the professor and his colleague Jamie Rector, they wrote a thing on crude oil production back in December, I think, and the professor just wrote an updated one that I'll shoot to you. But yes, remember they invoked the Defense Production Act to restart the Sable offshore platforms, Hondo, Heritage, and Harmony on the Outer Continental Shelf on Santa Barbara. So mm-hmm. That's cranking up to 50,000 barrels a day. And then you got these, you know, I'm not a politician, so I'm going to call these people. The state suing them, the Becerra, whoever it is, Bonta, whoever it is. These people are sick in the head. They're sick in the head. This state is in a crisis. I mean, you know, go away from running out, shortages. People are suffering right now.
They're suing them to stop the oil production. There's something not operating on all thrusters. Yeah.
The pain that their policies have inflicted on the state, and here's the president and Secretary Wright trying to do something positive to help the situation out, is to get us off the crude oil dependency. It's going to take a lot more than that to get us off the fuel, the product dependency. But, you know, these guys, they're, they, I don't know, Aaron. It just, and Bill, it just kind of blows me away. You know, I was driving back from my grandson's track meet in Folsom yesterday, and I come up to this, I think it's called Wheatland. Regular unleaded, $6.59, $6.79 for premium, or for mid-grade, and then super unleaded was $6.90. And the thing that caught my eye was red dye diesel, $7.34 a gallon. Back in December, it was like $2.60. So you're killing the farmers. You're absolutely killing the farmers.
Yeah, there's not a huge advantage of red dye diesel anymore.
Well, no, and that's the thing. That was to help farmers and where they could make a reasonable profit for their work. You know, their fertilizers, all that stuff. I'm kind of divesting a little bit here, but they're digressing. But, you know, their fertilizers. I had one farmer say they're just tearing their contract up. They can't afford their fertilizer. Debbie and her small, you know, her small 10-acre farm, her fertilizer last year was like 680. It's now 1,590 for the same amount of fertilizer, the same fertilizer. It's like 2.5 times the price. And you got these big farmers where they're, you know, they're fertilizing, you know, hundreds or thousands of acres. You know, they buy 1,000 gallons of, diesel. It was $2,600, $2,700 in December. Now it's $6,000, $6,500. You know, the farmers don't work on a big margin here of profit here. Their margins a lot of times are very slim when you take into labor and their equipment costs and energy and electricity and all the other things, health care, you know, all the things that they have to pay for. They're not working for some company like Exxon or Chevron where all this stuff's covered for them. They have to take care of themselves. So their margins are real low. And just, it's killing them. It's really killing the farmers. And then just everybody else. I mean, you know, just common sense.
Well, and all that is baked into the...
I'm not rich.
Yeah, that's all baked into the price of goods and services.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't just hit the producer.
Across the board, yes, all the way to transportation and stuff in the store. I mean, I'm surprised we haven't heard a lot of people complain. I've noticed prices going up in the store.
Yeah. Well, the sad part is we're putting ourselves in a position that, you know, people, we've said this a million times, but, you know, people are real quick to blame the war in Iran. And the thing is, we could have been unaffected by that. We had the ability in California to be self-sustaining and be insulated from that.
But yes, it's, you know, I go back on that to, like, the professor was talking about. He's really, obviously, really good with statistics and all that, but he's also good, you know, he looks into the history of things really well. He was talking about how we supplied both fronts of World War II with fuel, and we took care of our state. Now we can't even take care of our own state, and it's not even close. And you know, you had us warning about it. You had the CEOs warning about it. I mean, we got these three letters out from these three companies, including Chevron. If we're not for the policies of Newsom and especially his rogue air board, if we're not for their policies, we would not be very affected at all from the war. And the ironic part is not only would we be not affected, we could actually be selling fuel to Australia and New Zealand, to some of those countries. We could be helping them right now.
Yeah, we can't help ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cut our nose off to spite our face to have better air so we could buy oil and gas from gross polluters, because that makes perfect sense to no one. You know, we've mentioned it, but we've never really gone into the whole idea of these turnarounds that the refineries have to do. And we've talked a little bit about the cost and all that, but we should probably peel that apart a little bit more, because that's a huge factor with 7 refineries remaining in the state of California and the only other option bringing fuel from outside the country, you know. And six of the 7 have said, and those letters are on the page, the front page of the site there under our tab at gascrisis.org, so you can go read them. So that's 2 refineries each for PBF, Marathon, and Chevron, and they've all said, change your policy or we're going to leave. If any of these guys have a turnaround coming, that's millions and millions of dollars. Why would they do that if they're just going to get run out of the state?
Well, that's the thing they're looking at. You know, it's untenable and unsustainable. And we're talking the maintenance periods that they go through, they'll make improvements. They'll do stuff to increase refinery throughput. I know Valero, actually Exxon, right before Valero, spent over $1 billion on one maintenance turnaround period. It's where the refinery shuts down. There's a lot of coordination involved. A lot of the workforce jumps from, like in Valero, there's about 400 personnel total, and your workforce jumps to like 3,000 people that are in the refinery to do this turnaround. You're bringing in equipment, bringing in catalysts, bringing in these huge cranes. One tower they lifted, the crude oil vacuum tower, that was a 1 million pound lift.
Wow.
Those cranes are not cheap. Mm-hmm. Those are real expensive, and they have to, there's maintenance that they have to do. There's like boiler inspections they have to do by law. There's also like on the coker, sulfur units, different units, there's things that they look at, they inspect. They know where problem areas are, you know, that where problems can develop just from, you know, they have decades and decades and decades of history. So, you know, they're all looking at inspection. I remember one time they looked at some overhead, they're called fin fans, those huge fin fans on one tower, and they inspected it, and the day shift guy was kind of, you know, the day shift inspector was looking at it, and he had some concerns about it. So during the nighttime, when we came back in on the next day shift, there was a tag hanging on those fin fans that said condemned. So the night shift inspector said, no, we're not coming back up with this. And this was two big, huge tubed fin fans, and they were stainless steel. So they had to have those manufactured. I mean, the money to do that is just, you're talking incredible amounts of money. So, yes, they have to shut down. They want, when they come back up, they want to know they're gonna get a reasonable return on their, you know, ROCI, return on their capital invested. And in this state, it doesn't happen. That's why they're looking at this. Now you're doing this cap and trade. You're throwing this at us. You're wanting Chevron to pay out maybe another $500 million. PBF, which of the three, PBF is the smallest of the three by far. And they're in the paper on the on our domain, they're showing their increases, their cost going up by 400% to like $340 million or something like that. So, and then they're going to spend, you know, $300, $400, $500 million on a turnaround, a shutdown maintenance period. They're not going to do that. And I'm really worried because I was talking with the professor about last week, and he said, well, they're just the state's just throwing them a bone. You know, they're not taking this seriously because, and the thing is, what's really concerning to me is these people and their total blindness, because they tried to do that with Valero. Remember, they took Valero, Valero went to the state capitol somewhere around the end of November, and the state said, hey, we'll give you, you know, we got like $250 million we'll give you, can you stay open? And Valero told them to pack sand. Said, no, we're leaving. We're going to take our $1.1 billion loss. You keep your $280 million, whatever it was. You keep your money. We're leaving. We're done with you. We are not going to deal with this anymore. This is the thing. You know, they tried to throw, what you think they would pay attention to this and learn. These companies are serious. It's like Andy Waltz. I've seen him on a couple different, you know, where he's talking. And they don't want to leave. Andy Waltz and those CEOs at Marathon and PBF, they know what will happen to our state if they shut down and leave. They know. That's why, you know, if Andy Waltz, like, you know, we got to look at, you know, what we're doing with our money. We, you know, back in September, he was saying, well, I'm not saying, you know, we're going to go or we're going to stay. I mean, we don't want to go. We understand what's going on. You know, that's why when they moved their headquarters, they didn't just start shutting down their refineries. But, you know, like he said, the state's been at war with them for about the last 10 or 15 years, and it just gets to where it doesn't pencil out anymore. They have that fiduciary responsibility to all their shareholders. They have to make somewhat of it. It doesn't have to be a copious profit, but at least a decent profit. But instead, they're hemorrhaging money, and then they got to spend money on things like turnarounds. They're getting fined, egregiously fined. I mean, they even fined Budweiser $2 million in the close. The air district, the same air district that fined Valero. They fined Budweiser some $2 million in the close. they're finding them as they're leaving.
Yeah, huge incentive to do business here.
Yeah. Thanks, here, by the way. Goodbye.
Well, and with that kind of cost to do these upgrades and all of that, you can't sink that kind of money in if you're going to get run out on a rail.
Well, if you're not going to make money, you're getting railroaded, which is exactly what they've been doing. Calero spent, I think Keith Washington told me it was like $650 million on equipment for abating the SO2, sulfur dioxide and particulate matter out the main concrete stack. So they put in like $650 million worth of equipment for a wet gas scrubber, MEA scrubbing system, steam generator, and they replaced the crude unit furnaces with brand new ones. And then, you know, here they are later getting fined $82 million for the unit that makes hydrogen and carbon dioxide. And that was between that and the gasoline holdup where they had to build tankage or hold more storage up and build more tanks. That's when San Antonio just said, we're done. And no, you keep your $200 million, we're done with you guys. It's not happening anymore. So that's the, you know, it's unprecedented in history. I don't think any corporations have ever joined together like this. And they're all saying the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, when you read the letters from them, they're all saying the same thing. And I know that most people don't really realize that we can't just, you know, get fuel from Texas or somewhere, you know, that we don't have any pipelines that come into this state. It just
because we never needed them.
Right. But we don't have them. And there's no way you're going to build them to fix this problem in a timely fashion. And the president can't run in and make companies produce fuel. Doesn't really work that way. They can change the regulatory environment, but only briefly if the state doesn't agree. So bottom line is California governor's race this year is probably the most important thing on the ballot for every single person who lives in the state.
Oh, yeah. He's got to do something. Hilton or Mr. Bianco, they got to do something with this damn air board.
Yeah, you're not going to...
And the air districts, Bay Area Air Quality Management District, all these different San Joaquin Valley Air District, all these different air districts, they got to go through and just clean house. I'm sorry. It's just you can't run the state like this.
Well, they, we're not going to be out of a Democrat supermajority, in one election. But I do think a change at the top.
Well, he could do executive orders, which everybody knows could be turned around with the next administration. But if he implements executive orders and they really turn things around and make things work, wouldn't they have a harder time going back and saying, "Hey, we're"?
Well, you dismantle the agencies.
Yeah.
The governor's in charge of the executive branch. So just like the president is in charge of the executive branch. Same formula, just, you know, mm-hmm. in a smaller fashion. But he does have a lot of ability there. If they start passing, you know, different laws, and the difficulty is they pass laws, he can refuse to sign them, but with a two-thirds majority, they get to override that, in, I believe, most cases. So we're in kind of a bind, but that one change would certainly signal a more aggressive will of the people than we're seeing right now, because right now people are running around like chickens with their heads cut off, and there isn't really a united voice. We have to take a really quick break.
Okay.
And I thought the song Upside Down was fitting. I thought it was fitting 10 minutes ago, and I'm still good with it. So let's go there. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Who's to say I can't do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone.
Winter getting colder, summer getting warmer, tidal wave come across the Mexican border. Wide back gal in is cheaper by the barrel. Just don't get busted singing Christmas carols. That's us, that's right. Gotta love this American ride. Both ends of the ozone burning. Funny how the world keeps turning. Look, Ma, no hands. I love this American.
It's funny. My mom, I'm sure, never heard a Toby Keith song, but she would have liked him. he sings about all the stuff that she thought was important.
Yes.
Although she always voted the wrong way, but yeah, blame that on the Contra Costa Times. I lay that squarely at their doorstep. But yeah, I mean, what I was. I was just a little under 2 years old, and I was, I could say, the Pledge of Allegiance. So what was my mom doing with me as a toddler, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We practiced the Pledge of Allegiance every single day. Yeah, she's a good patriot. So, Mike, what are you hearing from guys that, like, you used to work with in the industry? Besides the fact that the price of U-Hauls is expensive leaving the state.
Well, they're, I mean, you know, some of them got decent transfers, but a lot of people got hosed, especially at Valero because they're non-union. So there wasn't any guarantee for anything there. A lot of people did get transfers. It's really, I'm kind of mixed on it. You know, I was writing my paper on the refinery, you know, and the turnarounds, and towards the end, I wrote a really scathing paragraph, and then Katie, kind of working with Katie Grimes, and she kind of tempered it a little. She wanted it to be informational because I was just thinking about Valero and just everything the state's done and how many people's lives are affected, how many people's lives are destroyed. And you go through this, the whole history with this state, with this governor, with this air board. You look at the whole shebang, the immigration, the Palisades, the high speed joke. I mean, it's not even funny. And then what they've done with the refineries, and what people don't realize is if we lose these other six refineries, you're losing 24 to 26 million gallons a day of gasoline production. Somewhere around 12 to 14 million gallons a day of jet fuel and diesel production. We can't make that up. That can't be made up. And people, you know, they need to put their critical thinking cap back on. Take a look at the situation right now, okay? Now, you get a lot of BS reporting from the drive-bys. This Chico station here, you know, they reported on my town hall, and then they did a report, and they said, well, the governor said, you know, they said, well, we're taking care of this. You know, we signed a law, so the refineries have to hold up their fuel, you know, extra fuel storage, which was exactly why Wilmington and Valero shut down. So, you know, they don't analyze anything anymore. Journalism, you know, it's like in a lot of places, it's absolutely dead. You know, you think they would go, well, you know, the governor's office is saying this, Mike or Professor or Stan, what do you think of that? No, they just report it, and it's absolutely wrong. It's patently false. It was patently a lie. And unfortunately, people get, you know, they hear a lot of this stuff because it's being fed to them. But we're on our way, right now we're on our way to a disaster. This looming disaster right now, like the professor in his own words, you know, crisis, the disaster in the making. And if we lose those six refineries, that's it. Everything, the state cannot get that kind of fuel imported. I don't think there's any place in the world that can make that amount of fuel and get it to us. We will be dead in the water. The Port of Los Angeles will close down. The largest food import into our country is through L.A. It'll go down. No logistics, you know, diesel, truck transportation, food in grocery stores, not just the, you know, goods that we use, but, you know, literally food. Our food will, you know, the biggest solid agricultural areas in the world, and we won't have food in our grocery stores. I mean, this is what we're potentially looking at. And they've been, you know, people need to take a look now. Look, they've been saying, they keep saying, oh, I have nothing to see here. There's nothing to see here. Okay, well, prices are going up. There's nothing to see here. And now, hold on, now they're actually starting to report, oh, we could be running into supply shortages now. But for how long have they been saying there's nothing to see here? And it's like they, it's like Governor, our wonderful governor, you know, he was, about 3 months ago, was saying that the military readiness, force readiness report that we published was not accurate and it was fear-mongering. But if you looked at the documents, the three letters that the oil corporation submitted to the state, two of those companies, Chevron's one of them, they submit our document, reference it as one of the documents that they were writing their letter to them, you know, to the state, saying, well, we were looking at this document here. This is all correct. It's like why Andy Waltz back in September said, I think we're already at that crisis mode. And he said a number of times, the state needs to declare a state of emergency. He's actually said that, you know, which is actually spot on correct. So, there, you know, that's one of the things I see, biggest things I see nowadays is people have lost their ability, just the critical thinking. Folks, you need to look and go, why have these prices gone up? Well, we told us. We were told there's nothing to look at. Now they're talking shortages. They're actually reporting it now. What's going on here?
Yeah.
Well, you can't, we have, what is it, 14 days of fuel stored? Is that right? Or we're supposed to?
That
or
was
something?
Yeah, he would. Well, it's back in the professor. I've learned so much working with him and Stan, too. You know, the three of us have learned a lot of stuff working with each other. It's one heck of a team between the three of us. But the, I think, 14 days. And typically when we reach 12 days, that's kind of a starting to hit like a yellow alert on Star Trek, you know, where the price jumps up at about a dollar a gallon. But last thing I heard was we're somewhere around 7 or 8 days.
Wow.
Of supply.
That's not, and that's the thing not is, much of a margin.
Well, that's the thing. It's the margin, the cushion's pretty much gone. And in that document that Professor Miché submitted with Professor Rector, he said he was saying that once the supply shock hits and these tankers stop coming, then we're going to start reducing our in-state inventories at something like 10 to 20% a week. So we're probably already there first or second week. So our, you know, it's not good. And again, it's to the point where even the drive-by media now is starting to report it. And now Democrats are also, there's Democrats are standing up because their constituents, you know, they've been saying there's nothing to look at here, there's nothing to look at. Well, now all of their constituents, they're not unlike us in the fact that they're paying, they're seeing the price go way up, $7-$8 a gallon, they're paying through the nose. And they're, you know, a lot of their constituents are going, hey, look, you were saying that nothing's going to happen here. There's nothing to look at. I just spent $200 filling my tank. What the heck's going on? What's wrong with you? Why aren't you doing your job? So I think what's going on with some of the Democrats in our state now, even in the assembly, they're starting to feel the pushback from their own constituents, just saying, hey, you know, what are you doing to us?
Well, the hard part is once it hits the pumps, I mean, once you start with the shortage, it isn't a warning signal. I mean,
no, it's there. It's
that's
on us.
End of the road.
Yeah.
What about the jet?
Yeah, that's. Mm. What's that? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what about the jet fuel? We don't hit that enough. And honestly, between the military readiness with jet fuel and. Well, the fact that we have international airports.
Yeah, but all these commercial airports, they need a lot of fuel.
Yeah, you got
people. Well, and they've been raising the rates big time, and they've been starting to, last 2 or 3 weeks, starting to cancel flights. That's constantly reported now in the media. That's going on. When we heard April 2nd that South Korea was shutting off the jet fuel, they're our biggest jet fuel supplier in Asia. So they shut that off. I know that some jet fuel is being moved from SoCal up to NorCal. So I think things are extremely tight. I've heard the price of jet fuel at minimum has doubled. I've heard other, reports where the price of jet fuel has tripled. And yes, we're right on the edge. We lose, especially right now, if we lose another refinery, if one goes down, we're in deep kimchi. I mean, mm-hmm. we're teetering on the edge, and it's like the supply shock hasn't totally hit. Those ships coming across the ocean, now they're pretty much gone. So that all of that fuel that was coming to us is no more. So the refineries, and then when the refineries, the ones that we have left online, the seven, when we need them to run at max rates, they're having to cut back because they were bringing in 30% of their crude oil from the Middle East. Remember that report like 4 or 5 days ago, the last crude oil shipment from the Middle East arrived down in Long Beach? Well, I'm sure they're sourcing, trying to source other crude oil supplies. I don't have enough knowledge on knowing. I mean, that's what I would be doing. But the last thing I heard was all the refineries are cut back. So you need them right now at max rates, but they're actually cut back. So it's kind of a snowball effect. Dominance, which we used to be, to dependence, which we are at now.
As far as jet fuel goes, you can't truck enough of that into the state to make a difference because we don't have enough tankers, do we?
That's correct. You know, you have the infrastructure, load, offload, it just doesn't exist. Yeah. California was never designed to do any of that stuff because California always took care of itself. That's how it got the fourth largest. What's the professor always say? 8% of the GDP, the other 92%.
You know? Yeah, 8% is oil and gas, and without it, yeah, the other 92 doesn't materialize.
That doesn't happen, and they never. Our state has never had to worry about that 8%. We've always taken care of ourselves. This is the thing, and you got the old governor who said, "Oh yeah, we're the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world." Oh, that's true. Okay, well, there's a reason why we got there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a reason why we got there, and it wasn't you, Governor Newsom. You did not make this happen. You're destroying it. You're killing people. You're killing the industries. Every industry, ag, apricots, peaches, all those, you know, canneries shutting down, Budweiser, Yamaha, all these companies leaving. And it's all for the same thing, the cap and invest. If you're running a border, remember Stan was explaining it last week on the cap and invest. If you're running a border, you're getting tapped on the cap and invest just like the oil refineries are. Where you driving one company. I mean, I remember that Budweiser plant was built in Fairfield back in like 75 or 6, and it's been fine. It's kind of a little shining star there while you're driving down Interstate 80. Now it's shut down. Just pretty much the same reason that Valero went down. Now that fourth or fifth largest economy in the state was because of our dominant energy industry. And now it is big time in jeopardy.
Didn't they just invest in a big windmill to help subsidize the cost of energy for that plant?
They did that a while ago, Bill. That's been there for a while, but yeah. Well, you got the trade winds that come in off the bay, over the hills, over America Canyon, and over Benicia. That's what I keep hearing. Well, the refinery was causing asthma. Well, no, the winds that are blowing always cause asthma. I got it all the way into Vacaville. You said the refinery causing asthma in Vacaville?
I always love the things that as someone who has asthma and has for 65 years, I always find it amusing, the things that cause asthma.
Well, it's when you're going down 680, you get off the Interstate 80, yeah, you head towards Benicia and cross over to Martinez to Concord. When you go down 680, the trees grow at about a 60-degree angle.
Yeah, right.
Towards the valley, because the winds are constantly blowing hard.
I don't think I've ever been through that Benicia area where the wind wasn't trying to blow you off the road.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And, you know, I was looking under the air quality index, I think it was 2024. The Solano County didn't have one single unhealthy day. In the whole county, there wasn't even one, there wasn't one single unhealthy day. Because the air stays clean, the air all stays clean there, it all stays clean there, that refinery. Whatever it admitted, and believe me, that's the other thing too, is I controlled those, multiple units that you don't control normally in one refinery. I controlled multiple units, and a lot of those were the ones that controlled the emissions that were going to the air. We were such, back when I ran that thing, the requirements were so strict back then. We emitted very, very little to the atmosphere at any time. Very little. And, you know, like they were going to run some of the more sour, heavy crude. They'd want to increase the rates, and I would be in the refinery, the management meeting with the refinery manager and the operations manager. And I was one of the best, if not the best, at dialing that refinery in as hard as I could to make the most amount of profit that we could. But, you know, when I tell them, they'd say, well, can we pick up the other continental shelf, which is the oil they just restarted? You know, can we pick that up another 500 barrels? And I'd look right back at them and say, no, I got it pushing as hard as we can go right now. I wouldn't go anymore. And there would be no pushback. You know, they wouldn't try to push those limits.
Hold that thought, Mike.
Hold everything where it is.
We have to come back and talk about that some more. But the news is going to preempt us. We'll be right back. Right. Our guest is Mike Ariza. We are chatting about the oil and gas issue here in California and actually what's kind of behind it. You can find more at WeThePeopleRadio.us.